pretty good sports year at LSU. We'll recap it. We'll also talk to a young man who's done something no one else has done in his field ever in the 98-year existence of what he does. How about that? The U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, a preview, and a little this and that with our good friend, because after all, it's hump day with Huguenin. Today, Wednesday, June 12th, 2019.
Look for fastball.
The 2-0. Swinging a long one to center. Going back. At the track. At the wall. Slam. Sox lead. Turn on the fireworks. 4-2 White Sox. Light it up.
Barnes sets. Letter high and deals. That's a line drive. Deep to left field. That ball is up, 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 and it is way gone. Holy smokes. Rob Chirinos with his 11th home run, a two-run shot, and that takes it to 10 for Astros. Rob Chirinos take a bow. Oh, my heaven.
The pitch. Swung out line right to left. Base hit. The Indians win it. A game winner. The first in the Major League career of Oscar Mercado.
Great. Good afternoon. Happy Wednesday. Hump day. Great to be with you. Thanks so much for being with us, wherever you may be. My main man, CD, the straw that stirs the drink, right there in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Yours truly, Studio 1A, and it's the middle of the week, and we've got a lot to talk about with a lot of, I think, very, very interesting guests coming your way. Starting with, in about 10 minutes, we had Sha'Carri Richardson on yesterday, giving a little love to LSU track and field, and deservedly so. She ran the fastest 100 meters outdoors of any woman in college track and field history. Today, the NCAA Outdoor Championships have been going on for 98 years. And Javon Harrison has done something that no one else has ever done in 98 years till now. And Javon Harrison won both the long jump and the high jump in Austin at the NCAA Track and Field Championships. Javon Harrison will share his story with us. He's a 6'5", a phenom, superstar to be in track and field. LSU has had quite the year in sports. I mean, I cannot lie. They have been sensational. Four SEC titles, 16 teams reaching postseason play. Cody Worsham, LSU Digital Media Director, will recap it all for us today. Michael Huguenin will join us for his weekly Hump Day with Huguenin edition. Not much going on in the football world, but he's in the state of Florida. He has known Mike Martin for a long, long time. What a great story it is for the coach of the team that knocked LSU out of the quest for going to a College World Series. But, heck, if we're not in it, why not Mike Martin win it in his 40th and final year? We'll talk to Michael Huguenin about that and other things along the way. And Alex Myers will join us to preview the 119th U.S. Open at famed Pebble Beach Golf Club. Great to see today two former LSU Tigers representing them, the school, at the U.S. Open. The young and the old of it. The pairing, of David Toms and Louis Gagné. Pretty good. Pretty good. Of course, David Toms won the 2001 PGA Championship, and at 52 years old, one last hurrah maybe at the U.S. Open. Gagné is 21 years old, and they're representing LSU at the U.S. Open. So that's our guest list for the day. Oh, by the way, Clint Domain, CD, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jordan. I'm doing fantastic on this Wednesday afternoon.
Well, we've got Zion Williamson in town, and we talked about, you know, where would you want to take him to dinner? And, of course, the first place they went, which was on my list, Gail Benson, David Griffin, Alvin Gentry, and Team Zion went to Commander's Palace, Uptown Nolens. Now, I don't know if you've ever eaten there before. They are famous for their Sunday brunches. With their milk punches and the jazz band trio that walks around and plays whatever song you want them to play. And the food is phenomenal. So Zion getting wined and dined as the NBA draft is a week and a day away from today. So we've got that. The NBA Finals resume on Thursday night. Back at Oracle Arena. It'll be the last game played at Oracle Arena. Win, lose, whatever. That's it, as the Warriors will be going off to their new digs in San Francisco. And I thought about this with Kevin Durant. Yeah, he suffered I feel terrible for him. And I feel terrible for the league and everybody involved. No one went into this thing thinking that Kevin Durant was going to get hurt. Kevin Durant wanted to play, never thought he was going to get hurt. And there's so many people saying this, quite the contrary. Nobody goes into something thinking they're going to get hurt. There's a chance of getting hurt every time you step on an athletic field, or as we are, we step on a tennis court, or we go jogging, or we play a pickup basketball game, or swing a golf club. Anything can happen. We get in our car, heaven forbid. Anything can happen. But I thought, you know, it's not the end of the world for Kevin Durant. At the very worst, he opts in for the final year of his contract with the Golden State Warriors, player option. He signs it. He takes the entire basketball season off. Now, do you think the Warriors are going to make the playoffs next year with Draymond Green and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry? I would think so. At the very worst, if I'm Kevin Durant, I sign in, I rest, I recover, I recuperate, I rehab, and then I come back for a playoff run, and I win another championship. And oh, by the way, for those X amount of games, I'm going to get paid $31.5 million. Then I go off into free agency and sign my max deal, and live happily ever after wherever I want to go. I mean, think about that. All you do is rehab. And it's a pain. It's no fun. And I feel for the guy. But $31.5 million minimum guaranteed to sit there and do nothing but rehab? I can think of worse. Can't you? I really can think of worse. The question is, do the Raptors close this thing out at Oracle Arena, or do we have a Game 7 over the weekend? We'll see. We'll see. Toronto has won back-to-back games in Oakland. I mean, this other than Game 1, the road teams won everything. So we'll see. I feel for Kevin Durant, but it's not like he's got nothing left in him. Now, will he be the same player? You know, modern science, modern medicine, he might be as good. He might be even better. I don't know. Time will tell on that front. But Game 6 coming up tomorrow night. So a lot to talk about. We're brought to you each and every day by Hooters.
If you haven't been to the new Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, I say it's new. It's the same building, but it's all been newly renovated, and it is beautiful. And each and every Wednesday, we have what's called Wings Day. Stop by for our 10-piece boneless platter, fries, and a dressing for only $8.99. It's dine-in only, and it's at any and every Hooters in Louisiana. Hooters just makes you happy, and there's a lot to be happy about. Great food, watch the ball games, baseball games on the tube, and get ready for a fun-filled rest of the week. Every day's fun at Hooters. It's got to be fun to be Javon Harrison. Again, done something no one else has done in 98 years in men's NCAA outdoor track and field. We'll talk about how he won the long jump and the high jump in the same meet next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
We welcome you back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. If you listened yesterday, this is track and field love time, okay? The season's over, the NCAA championships are over, and two individuals stood out above all others. We had Shakari Richardson on yesterday, who ran the fastest 100-meter outdoor time for a woman ever in the history of NCAA track and field. Well, today, we've got someone who, for the first time in the 98-year history of the NCAA Men's Championships, that an athlete won both the long jump and the high jump at the same meet. We welcome in that person. He's a 6'5 sophomore from Huntsville, Alabama, Javon Harrison. Javon, thank you for the time, and man, congratulations on something that no one's ever done. How does that make you feel?
Thank you, and I'm glad to be here. It made me feel very great. I didn't know it was the first time ever done in history, so to hear it really, really did something for me.
You're from Huntsville, Alabama. What brought you to LSU for track and field?
During my senior year, the recruiting process, LSU just seemed like a great place to be, and I really liked the coaches, so I decided to come here.
6'5", now come on, you had to play basketball or something, right? You had to.
Yeah, I did basketball in high school.
Were you any good? You got a good jumper, or can you help Will Wade out a little bit?
I was all right, you know. It's just something I did for fun. It ended up being track that got me to college, but
yeah,
it was fun while it lasted.
Kind of kept you in shape, right? Yeah. Golly, I'm looking at your bio. Biomedical engineering. Are you crazy? I mean, no, congrats. That's awesome.
Thank you. I'm not in that major anymore, but
okay.
I'm a cybersecurity major now.
Oh, that's awesome. That's even better. All right. Let's go back to the meet itself. And Wednesday, I believe, was the long jump. Which one of the two did you feel more confident in your ability to win of the two events?
In the two events, I felt like, I don't want to say it'd be easier, but I felt like I'd have a better chance at winning the high jump versus the long jump.
Okay.
So to go out and win both really surprised me.
All right, so you got the hard one, not saying it's harder, but maybe more competition, whatever it may be. You won the long jump on Wednesday night. Take me through it. What was your winning jump, and did you feel great throughout the process?
My winning jump was on my second attempt in the first round, and it was 26 feet 11 inches, or 8.20 for those who need the meters.
Okay.
It was a great competition. Jumping on my first attempt, I just knew I had to get out a good mark. And then on the second attempt, someone jumped a 26.10, so I just knew I had to go out there and beat it.
That's awesome. And then how does it work from there? Do you have to jump any more? Do you just wait till somebody maybe tops what you have, and then you if they are so fortunate to do that, then you take another attempt? Or do you have to keep jumping?
I mean, I keep jumping to stay warm and because I want to try and beat my mark. There are some people who feel like they jumped a good mark and they're going to leave it there and then might try and jump later on, but I feel like that'll make your legs get cold, so I wouldn't do that.
How long is that event? I mean, it seems like it might be pretty long. Like you're out there waiting your turn, waiting for the other competitors to do their jump, and then you do yours. Is it a long process?
The long jump isn't really that long of a process, but they had some technical difficulties at NC, so it was a little bit longer than it probably would have been.
All right. So you get the long jump, a personal record for you in that one. You're an NCAA champion. The high jump's not till Friday. So take me from Wednesday night through Thursday. What do you do? Are you doing anything? Are you off your feet? What are you doing for the most part?
Okay, so after the long jump, my hamstring was hurting a little bit. So from Wednesday night through Thursday up until Friday when I competed, I was like getting treatment, getting my hamstring worked on, staying off my feet, hydrating, just making sure I could do everything I could to make sure I could be in my best condition for high jump on Friday.
All right. So people might say that treatment, that's not fun, man. That's you're sitting and people are just rubbing on you and stretching. It's not the most glorious thing in the world. I'm sure you'd rather be doing some other things, but it's a necessary evil that you had. So going into Friday night, how did the left hamstring feel?
Going into Friday night, it felt better than it did on Wednesday. I wouldn't say it was like 100% because I could still feel it a little bit, but it was nothing that would hinder my performance.
All right, so take me through, what is the bar set at to start off on your first attempt?
For the high jump, the bar was set at, I want to say, 6'10".
Jeez.
Maybe a little higher.
That's just kind of a warm-up, right? And apparently, from what your coach told me, you were like Steph Curry shooting threes. You were 6 for 6. You didn't miss.
Yes, sir. That's very important for high jump because of how they do like misses. So if you're clean all the way through, you're more likely to win even if you guys end on the same bar. So,
all right, so you're at 6'10", 6'11". You clear that one. How high does it go up on the next? And take me through all the stages of this.
The progression was, I think, 6'10", 6'11". I forget where it started. Then it was around 7, 7 3/4, 7'1",
okay,
7'2", around there. Then it went to 7'3.5", 7'4", and some change, 7'5", and some change, and then 7'6.5".
All right. You were ranked 5th nationally going into this thing, but you certainly didn't perform like that. What was it about that day? I mean, you're fighting a hamstring. It's got to be in the back of your mind. How did you do what you did, and you topped out at over 7'5"?
Going into this, I just knew I had to execute the run properly. So if I executed my run properly, I wouldn't have to put as much pressure on my leg because the run up to the bar is probably the most important part of high jumping. So not having to overpower my leg and just jump actually really helped. So,
man, that's amazing. What gave you more joy, or were they both equally as a happy moment for you? I mean, you said the long jump was maybe the more difficult to win. But the high jump 2 days later on a bad leg, you still did that. So, I mean, what gave you more joy?
I'd say that they both gave me the same amount of joy because in indoor I went out early in long jump and didn't make finals. And then high jump I got second. So to win both really was a big accomplishment for me.
Man, again, no one in the 98-year history of the NCAA Men's Championships has someone won both the long jump and the high jump at the same meet. I've got to believe your life has changed for the better because of this. Has it?
I mean, I don't know if it's changed that much. I mean, more people, I guess, know my name now, but other than that, I'm just still enjoying life.
Still the same guy. So what is Javon Harrison doing now that the track season is over, what's the next step for you?
Right now I'm doing summer school, so I'm back in school, hitting the books, and hopefully I'll be doing some summer meet sometime soon.
Your teammate Mondo Duplantis declared that he, I've had a great time. I'm going to miss LSU, but I've got bigger fish to fry. He's looking for the World Championships and the 2020 Olympic Games. Those games in 2020. Sha'Carri said, I'm going to try. What about Javon Harrison?
Same here. I mean, I'm going to try to make the team. It's a goal of mine to make the Olympics. So 2020, we'll be at the trials and we'll see what happens.
What is it like for a track athlete? You know, football players, basketball players, baseball players, they have that profession. If they're good enough, they can go join the professional ranks. Track and field is huge in Europe, and a lot of people go there and make a great living. Is that something that you're looking toward doing or not?
Going pro is definitely a dream of mine, and I'm looking forward to trying to do that. As far as living in Europe, I don't know too much about that. I don't think I'll be moving out of the States.
Okay.
But
that's where most of the meets are and the lucrative meets are during the course of a season, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, man, look, I know the goal is for the team to win, but if the team can't win, the individual accolades aren't half bad. So congratulations on, stand proud, man. What kind of medals do you get on that thing, by the way? Are they good ones? Because I've gotten some medals before in certain things and trophies, and they're just not all that good. Do you like the hardware that you got?
I do like the hardware. It's not really a medal. They give you a plaque.
A plaque?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, congratulations. Thanks for the time, and good luck in your studies this summer. And heck, you're just a sophomore, so bigger fish to fry down the road. And, man, congratulations, and thanks for the time.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. You have a great day.
You too, my friend. Javon Harrison. Nobody's ever done it but him. Won both the long jump and the high jump in the same NCAA track and field championship meet. Wow. Little love for track and field. They deserve it. Speaking of that, when we come back, we'll kind of recap the year it was athletically at LSU with the digital media director of LSU, Mr. Cody Worsham. That's coming up next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helpert Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. You know, the calendar year for LSU sports has come to a close, and now we get ready for August and the start of a brand new calendar year. It's been quite a season for LSU sports, with four SEC titles to go along with 16 teams reaching postseason play. Let's kind of put it all in perspective and recap it with the guy inside the LSU Athletic Department. He is the digital media director for LSU, just a good old guy, our good friend Mr. Cody Worsham, kind enough to join us. Cody, good afternoon, my friend. How was the family vacation, taking the little ones to the beach? That's always an experience.
Yeah, it is always an experience. It was good, Jordy. It was not as difficult as it was last year, I guess. Just I'm getting a little bit older, a little bit more independent. Spent a little less time chasing around, a little more time sitting on a chair. Not much time, but a little more time. So hopefully that trend continues. And in a couple of years, I'm actually, like reading books and drinking beers on the beach instead of chasing kids around. So
yeah, but enjoy that when they ask you to build that sandcastle, man. That's good times, man. Good times. So, pretty darn good year for LSU sports. I hold it in complete correlation to you going on board and working within the athletic department.
I hope that's not the case, because if things go bad, then I'll get blamed for it. So I'll go ahead and keep passing the credit to the people who deserve it, the coaches and the athletes. But it was a good year. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of these kind of stats that you can pull that kind of show how well balanced the athletic department was this year. All the teams, I'm not going to get them exactly right, but if you look at, you know, teams that made a super regional in baseball and softball and finished in the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, and made a New Year's Six bowl, LSU's the only one.
That's right.
There's a lot of stats like that that kind of start pulling apart. No program in the country had the level of success, especially in the postseason, across so many sports as LSU did. Not to mention the SEC championships he talked about with soccer and track and field and the other programs that won conference titles, basketball, of course. But you know, you had national champions and individual national champions like Javon Harrison and Shakari Richardson, who were just phenomenal, record-setting performances. So a lot of achievement around here, and it's been fun to see and fun to cover.
Yeah, we just spoke to Shakari yesterday and Javon today, as a matter of fact, and just, I mean, really, boy, do they represent LSU well, and just so gifted and talented, my goodness. But Cody Worsham, kind enough to join us. What was more surprising, the end result of LSU football, the end result of LSU basketball, or the end result of LSU baseball? Because they're all – LSU baseball is supposed to go to Omaha. I'm surprised that they didn't. I think LSU football, nobody expected them to finish the way they did. And LSU basketball going to a Sweet 16 in only a few years under Will Wade with everything that took place with them. What was the most surprising thing?
It'd be hard to say anything was more surprising than this basketball season. Not necessarily the type of success they had. I think a Sweet 16 before the season wouldn't have shocked anybody. It would have been a nice projection, but it wouldn't have shocked anybody. I think an SEC championship was a little bit surprising.
Yes.
I think if I go back and look at SEC media days for basketball, they were picked like sixth or something.
Mm-hmm.
To finish ahead of Kentucky and you know, some of these perennial powers, Mississippi State that was picked ahead of them this year, Auburn, Tennessee, you know, to finish ahead of those teams, I think is a pleasant surprise. And of course, all the other stuff that happened was certainly unpredictable. But I think that's probably it. You know, they set themselves up well for the future, the way that they finished, and those guys overcame a lot of adversity, both on the court and off the court, to get where they were. So I think I'd go with that, basketball.
Basketball. Cody Worsham, kind enough to join us. You know, we talk about the big three, the revenue earners, but gymnastics finishes number two in the country. How about beach volleyball? Basically, in its infancy, finishes number three in the country. So that was quite a pleasant surprise, and everybody excited.
Yeah, the thing with beach volleyball is, you know, it's such a West Coast-dominated sport because, you know, that's a high school sport out in California that the kids play beach volleyball. Here, you know, there's no high school beach volleyball, you know, in the LHSAA. Now, a lot of the volleyball players will go play at Mangoes in Baton Rouge, or they'll go play at Coconut Beach in New Orleans, but it's not a main sport. So they've had to kind of build their program differently than a lot of other programs build, and they just keep getting better and better. The addition of their facility here, I think, was one of the smartest things that LSU's done in a long time, especially for that sport, because it was such a, I won't say easy conversion, but it was such a natural conversion to take that old tennis stadium and instead of it being just an unused facility, turning it into something valuable and unique. I think it's the only beach volleyball arena in the country, maybe in the world, specific to that sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a unique and excellent facility that, you know, in addition to the success they've had, they can now use that to pull in recruits from all over the country and continue to be a really elite program. So it's that's a really fun sport to watch and a fun sport to go out and experience too. So hopefully that this is just the beginning for them.
Yeah, no question. Cody Worsham, kind enough to join us. It's kind of ironic. Women's soccer reaches the NCAA second round. The coach goes and leaves for another program, and I don't think we still have a soccer coach. And that season starts pretty darn soon, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think players report in August, so I would expect that LSU hires a soccer coach in the coming weeks, coming months. But yeah, it was a great season for them, and you know, going and winning an SEC tournament title, that was such a fun run for that team. They're such a, you know, of all the athletes that I've covered, they're all great. That soccer team has a real special character to them. All the athletes, they really love their sport, they really love their craft, they're dedicated to it, they're passionate about it, they're passionate about LSU. They're fun to cover. So hopefully they can bring in a coach that can pick up where Brian Lee left off. It seemed like things are going in the right direction, and just build on that. And you know, they got a lot of talent coming back. If they can bring back, you know, girls like Lucy Parker, who's a, you know, international quality defender. They've got so much talent over there. Hopefully they can come back and do it again next year.
We talk about the team success. My goodness, there were some unbelievable individual performers within that athletic department on their respective teams. My goodness, where do you begin? Like, if you had to give the one award to that individual athlete for what he or she accomplished throughout the course of the year, can you pinpoint who would Cody Worsham give it to?
Well, the first three that come to mind, and this is probably a little bit of recency bias, though, is the three track athletes. I know Mondo didn't win a national championship, but first of all, the guy that beat him had an amazing day. Second of all, the height that Mondo stalled at, that he didn't get over, he's only cleared twice in his life, so it's not like he had a bad day in the national championship. But what he did this year, and the records that he broke, setting NCAA records, he's going to have a chance to win Olympic gold. He stands out to me. But the other two track athletes, Javon, if you look at his numbers, the high jump and the long jump, it's not an event that people, that they pair together. You would maybe think that they might because it's a jump, but it's such a different jump. I'm working on a story on this, and I'm still checking the data. Aaron Hyder, the track SID over here, is checking the data. But I think only one other athlete in the history of the world, not NCAA, world history, has cleared the high jump and the long jump numbers that he's met. So that's the kind of unique athlete that he is. Wow. And then, of course, Sha'Carri with you know, running a 10.75, and then the time that she ran in the 200, I think she's the only athlete in the world to ever do that. So those three were just exceptional. I mean, Antoine Duplantis, you know, breaking the hits record, he certainly stands out. You know, I think
gymnasts?
You could look at, yeah, of course, the gymnastics had so many outstanding performers, but you know, it's hard to. Sarah Finnegan is maybe the greatest gymnast that ever has come through LSU. So there's a bunch of them. It's hard to pick just one. Like I said, I'm probably suffering from some recency bias here, but there's a lot of really good candidates.
There's a lot of good candidates for next year as well, and it seems to me, under the guidance of Scott Woodward, football's trending upward. Basketball gets those players back. They get the five-star from in Watford and maybe some more coming down the pipeline. They're certainly trending up. Baseball loses a lot of players, but, boy, if you go by pitching and if everyone gets in healthy and stays healthy, man, they're trending up. It just seems like everything's moving onward and upward, where this is kind of like going to be the norm for a while.
Hopefully so. You know, it's hard to sustain success, especially in the SEC. I mean, if you look at baseball, how many teams are in Omaha right now for the SEC? Is it four? Is it
four?
Is it
four
five?
Out of eight.
It's a bunch. You know, everyone in the SEC West was in a super regional except for what Alabama, I think, was the only SEC West team not in one. So it's a loaded conference. But yeah, everyone's kind of trending the right way. And that becomes, you know, when you have an athletic department that there are no weak links, it kind of becomes, it feeds off itself. It inspires, you know, programs inspire other programs and elevate each other. And then you've got sort of this feedback loop, this positive feedback loop where excellence becomes the standard and everyone's trying to live up to that standard. So hopefully that continues. Hopefully everybody takes a step forward next year. And hopefully there's a couple of national championships for teams and things keep going in the right direction. But most importantly, we're talking about kind of a year in the view here. I finished my first season kind of in this role, which is so different from my other role.
I was going to ask you about that. Yes. What did you learn?
I think the biggest thing I've learned is you get a different appreciation for the amount of work that everybody puts in. coaches, staff, support staff, athletic department officials. I think a lot of people on the outside, you know, I certainly was before I got here, you're a little bit jaded about it. You have, you know, you think people are coasting on you know, what they make, or they're happy with what they've got, or they're doing things the wrong way, or whatever opinion that you have from the outside. When you get on the inside, what I've observed is just everyone around here works really hard, and they do things the right way, and they treat people well. And there's just I don't know, it's there's a lot of people around here who inspire you with the way they work, from the very, very, you know, first floor where they're selling tickets to the top floor where they're making decisions. Everybody just really grinds, and, you know, it kind of makes you want to come into work every day and grind yourself. You feel like if you take your foot off the gas that you're not living up to that standard. So that's the biggest thing I've learned. I just have a lot of respect for the people here at LSU, and just how hard they work, how much they love what they do, and how well they treat people.
So as the digital media director, the seasons are over. So what does Cody Worsham do now in preparation for the fall when things get cranked up again?
Well, maybe I'll go back to the beach. Maybe they can give me another month of vacation and I'll pick my feet up. I've got some projects I'm working on. You know, we did a basketball podcast this year. I'd like to expand that into some other sports maybe. So we've got to lay some groundwork for that. I've got a few stories to write. I'm certainly going to do some track stuff here to recap what those two athletes in particular did. And then, you know, football's already here and working out, and there's football stories to tell. So, you know, a lot of it is kind of laying foundations and planning out the year and you know, also some self-evaluation. What did we do well? What did we not do well? How can we get better? Those sorts of things. But there's still work to do and stories to write. You know, it's a little bit slower, but the wheels certainly don't stop turning. So I'll try to be there and capture as much as I can.
Kind of sounds like what I do at this time of the year. It's you kind of get creative and you try and invent things. But thank goodness LSU always seems to provide something. Somebody does something of an outstanding nature that you need to talk about. And then, of course, there's Kevin Durant and Anthony Davis and all. So it never does really slow down. But again, in a nutshell, one of the more successful, no national championship, but some incredible individual accomplishments, and as an entirety, as an athletic department, I mean, I think one of the best they've ever had.
Yeah, hopefully so. You know, it's again, I think the standard here is definitely championships. I think we all want to play and work to a championship standard, and so that's something that I think we'll all be looking at next year and hoping that we can get a couple of them. You know, not just one, but a couple of them, a few of them.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, I think, you know, winning is certainly important. But to me, especially having worked here for a year now, doing things the right way is just as important. And we've done that, and I'm proud of that. And hopefully we continue to do that. And I think if you do that, hopefully the championships come.
And, oh, by the way, IMC, the Tiger tribute for all those athletes that had done what they really needed to do, and that was go to class and get a degree. And there's a lot of athletes graduating with a great foundation to go and be successful out there in the real world. When Father Time says you can't compete anymore, they have something to fall back on. So that's something to be proud of as well.
Well, yeah, if you want to talk about insecurity, I did a story on, I think, four of the honors graduates who are athletes and some of the stuff that they're about to go do in their professional careers. And, you know, I enjoyed the story. I felt a little bad about myself after, kind of wondering what I was doing with my life when some of these athletes are competing every day in their sports and then dominating the classroom as well. So they've been very impressive.
Well, I hope you get to the beach. I hope you get those 30 days off and just come back at, you know, at August 1st and refreshed and ready to go. I'm a heck of a boss, Cody. So, you know, you can come work for me anytime you want.
Yeah, I'll play back the podcast of this interview for my boss.
There you go.
And just, hey, Jordy said it, so let it be done.
Scott knows me, so let it be written, so let it be done. There you go. Cody, thank you, buddy. Enjoy the summer.
Right,
we always look forward to your stories. It really goes in. You've done a tremendous job. You really go in depth and take us places where very, very few can go. And so we all appreciate your efforts and your work. So keep it up.
Yep.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure being with you, Jordan.
Okay, man. You take care. That's Cody Worsham, LSU's digital media director. Pretty darn good LSU season. Again, they pretty good. Gymnastics finishes number two in the country. Beach volleyball, number three. Men's track indoor, number three. Football, number six. Women's track indoor, number 15. Men's basketball, the Sweet 16. Softball, Super Regionals. Men's golf, NCAA championships. Women's golf, NCAA regionals. Women's soccer, NCAA second round. Women's tennis, second round. Men's swimming, number 26 in the country. Women's swimming, number 30. Baseball. Outdoor track and field. Pretty darn good. We'll be back. We'll wrap up hour number one next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, 54 minutes after the hour, quick wrap-up of hour number one. It's a done deal. Cam Jordan signed that three-year contract extension with the New Orleans Saints. It's a win-win for everybody, everybody concerned. And it's a win-win for Michael Thomas. He's next in line, and he's going to get paid. My buddy Jeff Duncan came out and said that the Saints have finalized their plans for their West Coast swing in weeks 2 and 3 of the regular season. So they play the L.A. Rams in week 2, then they play the Seattle Seahawks in week 3. The team will fly to Seattle immediately after the week 2 Rams game, and they will practice at the University of Washington all week in prep for their week 3 game versus the Seahawks. Let me tell you, ain't a bad town to go to have a couple of days off. Now, the coaching staff is going to be working. The players will have they'll rehab on Monday. They'll take their normal Tuesday off. It's a great city. They're going to love it. So all you Saints out there, call me. I'll tell you where to go and how to get there. It's a fabulous, fabulous city. Mini camp going on day 2. Jared Cook is really, Drew Brees is not there. He's still out on the West Coast with that lawsuit against the jewelry store, jewelry manufacturer, whatever. So a lot of Teddy Bridgewater getting work in. And everyone that I've talked to, Jared Cook has been very impressive. The tight end that came over from the Raiders. And, oh, by the way, very, very big radial catch zone. Big hands. Going to be a great target for Drew Brees. Oh, by the way, it's must-watch TV. Get your HBO subscription because Hard Knocks is going to be with the Raiders. Oh, my God. Antonio Brown. Perfect, the linebacker. John Gruden. And all. That's going to be crazy. Going to be crazy. I'm actually going to watch it. Because they are invasive. They are. And you don't know if somebody's acting in real character or if they're acting for the TV, for the cameras. But it'll be interesting. And you talk about a potential dumpster fire. Wow. Carr, the quarterback, and John Gruden, they've been seen screaming on the sidelines at one another. Won't that be interesting? The Raiders on Hard Knocks. Wow. Hour number one is history. Hour number two will be busy. Michael Huguenin, Hump Day with Huguenin, and Alex Myers previewing the 119th U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. It gets underway tomorrow. It's all coming your way. Hour number two. The Jordy Hultberg Show, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We're your source for LSU sports, the Houston Astros, and we're number one in Acadiana and proud of it and working harder than ever to widen the gap. We'll be right back.
from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. Happy Wednesday, June the 12th. CD back in the 237 Roof Studios Master Control Suite. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. Great to be with you. Antoine DePlantis named today to the 2019 All-South Region second team by the American Baseball Coaches Association. And Woj is saying that the Lakers and the Boston Celtics are in talks with the New Orleans Pelicans about Anthony Davis. Celtics have enough ammunition to do it by themselves. The Lakers are going to need a third team to make it happen. So stay tuned. The NBA draft is on the 20th, 1 week and a day from today. So stay tuned. Without further ado, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Once again, good afternoon. We welcome Clint to the program. What's going on, my friend?
Well, you know, it's definitely a busy day, especially when you look at the world of basketball. You kind of led me to the perfect way to start off that Hot Topics there, Jordy. And it's without a doubt the Rich Paul, Anthony Davis kind of SI article. Had you seen this? And him comparing... I found this hilarious, Jordy. Comparing the Los Angeles Lakers to Jennifer Lopez, saying that you don't want him to marry J-Lo? Like, are you serious? Is that where we're at right now?
You know, telling the Boston Celtics he's not going to sign with you. They're so trying to manipulate this thing to go exactly the way they want to go it. And the Pelicans hold all the cards. So we shall see what happens. It won't be much longer, but... I'm so tired of Rich Paul, Clutch Sports. They drive me nuts. They just do.
Just get them out, Jordy. Get them all out of there, because it is just getting ridiculous what we've been seeing from Rich Paul, Clutch Sports. Let us just enjoy what we got with Zion Williamson down the line. Yeah. And I think it'd be really cool. And I think the report is saying that possibly the Lakers are going to be using the number 4 pick as a bargaining chip there.
Right.
And that could be, imagine how really good that would wind up being, Jordy, to have the number 1 and number 4 pick. Mind you, once you get past the top 3 in this year's draft, I feel like it winds up dipping off a little bit. Obviously, you got Zion, RJ Barrett, and Ja Morant, according to some reports. It could very well be in that order.
Right.
So, Jordy, I mean, who would you wind up wanting the Pelicans to get with that 4th pick?
Oh, man. There's so many that they could pick from. You're just going to try. And that's just why this deal needs to get done before well before the draft on the 20th, so that the Pelicans can go out and bring some people in. They got to find the right character guy and the right fit. Who's going to fit best with Zion, Drew Holiday? Who's going to fit the best? And what other all-star, what other players come in with the deal? You got to find the right fit to put together the most cohesive unit from a chemistry perspective and a talent perspective. That's why this thing is evolving and moving a little bit quicker. You see, the Celtics are involved, the Lakers are involved. Who else is involved? Who knows? But I think this thing, when we reconvene on Monday and talk, we may have a deal, and I think we'll have a deal in place. I really, truly do. I do. I got to ask you a question.
Okay.
I'm gonna turn the tables on you.
That's cool.
We talked yesterday about soccer. And I said, man, USA scoring goals like left and right. I had no idea that they'd end up scoring 13-0 against Thailand.
A record, Jordy.
A record. And they kind of celebrated, much to the chagrin of many of the purists who said they ran up the score. You didn't need to celebrate. What is your thought process on the celebration factor that Team USA did in the blowout of Thailand?
Well, the one that I think everybody's been talking about, Jordy, is the fact you had one of them celebrate Mind you, this is her first career goal, people. This is a moment that she's going to remember forever, regardless if it was a 13-0 complete shellacking of Thailand. From what I heard, I didn't see any of the video, but there was a little girl they wound up cutting to in the crowd after one of the goals. You can just see her. She's like, I do not want to be here anymore. Bring me home. I don't want to see Thailand just get completely annihilated. And that's what happened, Jordy. And I'm like, yeah. I let them celebrate. I feel like it's just we're becoming a culture that isn't a fan of people celebrating. We talk about it all the time with football. We're like, oh, don't celebrate too much. Don't gyrate too much. And then MLB, you don't want a bat flip. Don't bat flip. Don't do this. Don't do that. Let the people celebrate the great moments, especially a moment like that first career goal. You got to let people enjoy the moment.
Celebrate. I don't want to take this over, but I just you got me doing this Twitter stuff now, you see? And so it's a dangerous thing, but
Coach O said that.
This is some significant news via Dennis Dodds at CBS.
Oh, yes.
A high-ranking NCAA official goes on the record and declares that six schools will be slapped with level one grade notice of allegations this summer. Two very high-profile programs will be served in a matter of weeks, all involving college basketball. So hold your breath.
Oh, it's going to be something to kind of keep an eye on this summer, Jordy. And in that report, they're also mentioning, obviously, Kansas, Arizona, and Louisville are kind of three programs already under investigation. Yep, Auburn's going to be one that I feel like could very well be in there. Maybe LSU, but we'll see on that. That might not happen, at least at this time. I'm sure maybe next summer they'll be slapping some other people around. It'll be in phases, Jordy.
Kansas for sure, Louisville for sure, Arizona for sure, Auburn for sure. Those people went to jail. So, you're right, but that's interesting. We'll NCAA working pretty quickly on this deal, so we'll see.
We'll see.
All right, I kind of took over on that. I didn't mean to, but there was just important stuff.
Hey, sometimes you got
to
do that.
That we had to get to. So more important stuff coming your way in just a minute. Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Do yourself a flavor. Bring some Cajun Chef hot sauce wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. Hump Day with Huguenin next.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump Day!
Oh, yes, it is. It's a great day whenever we can talk to Michael Huguenin. Good day, my friend. How's your summer so far, big guy?
It's extremely rainy down here, which makes the days longer. But I think it's about 75 days until the season, college football season starts. But some interesting college baseball storylines, obviously.
Yeah.
Toward the end of the NHL and NBA seasons. And a lot of recruiting going on, obviously. Yeah. And I think the early signing period has ramped up the importance of getting commitments in the summer. I think in the past, a kid committed in June or July, and you're like, well, he's got 9 months to go. And now it's only 5 months, and I think it makes a difference.
I'm with you completely.
I've got to ask you this this thing that I saw about Clemson coach Dabo Swinney, who – was on a Sirius XM radio show and discussed recruiting in his home state of Alabama now that he's won two titles at Clemson. And at one point, Swinney said he felt like, quote, Osama bin Dabo sneaking into Alabama. What? Why would he say something like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's his way of trying to be sort of funny in that he's a hated man in Alabama now. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy who grew up in the state, went to Alabama, was a dyed-in-the-wool Crimson Tide guy. Now he's going into Alabama and taking guys like Justin Ross out. But, that was – I'm not sure when he said it because I saw one report say, well, that's actually an old quote. And someone else said, no, it's new. So, that's just he made a poor – I would argue a poor choice of words to explain that, he's – I think maybe 5 years ago, people in Alabama looked at him like, he's our crazy cousin. And now he's the cousin that no one wants at their meal because he tends to dominate the conversation.
That's right. You mentioned baseball. Mike Martin brought his Florida State Seminoles into Baton Rouge and won two games in the Super Regional. Now he's going back to the College World Series yet again. He's had like 40 straight 40-win seasons, unheard of. He's never won the entire thing, but what a career. And what it seems like such a nice man.
Yeah, I think he is a nice man. And, yeah, he's retiring after 40 years, more than 2,000 wins. And I think the thing that's great, he's got a streak of 40. He's won at least 40 games every year, but he's averaged more than 50 wins. And that's a mind-blowing number.
Wow.
This, I would argue, you know, because I live in Florida and because this is Mike Martin's last year, the FSU baseball team got a little bit more coverage than normal.
I bet.
And about 5 weeks ago, people legit were wondering, oh, wow, Mike Martin could actually go out on his worst team. This team might not even make the make a regional. Instead, they're the number three seed, get sent to Athens, mauled everybody there. Then they go to Baton Rouge and win in two games. I would argue why you pitched to Drew Mendoza. I don't know. Drew Mendoza is a kid from Orlando, and I've heard about him. He was a great high school player as well. It's a really nice story because he is a really nice man. Now, I don't think they're going to win it all, but the fact that he got there in his last year, I got to think that makes him exceedingly happy. And heck, he's been there so long, he probably knows half the welcoming committee, and heck, he might even own a house there. He's there so often.
I'm with you. I went to both games. I don't know how that team lost as many games as it did. I have no earthly clue. You talk about some athletes. Man.
Yeah, they're playing really good baseball right now. It's almost as if a switch got turned on late in the year, and it's almost like they're channeling past players. We got to get there. Paris and Van Eck are really good pitchers. The Flowers kid is a great athlete who's become a pretty good closer. Mendoza can hit. They got a couple other guys who, the left fielder, the kid who was a walk-on. He played 3 years of club baseball. I mean, what a story. So, Berger, I don't even know his name. It's such a phenomenal story, though. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you're a college baseball fan, I get the fact if you're a Florida fan or a Miami fan or an LSU fan this year, you're gritting your teeth about Mike Martin being there. But it is a nice wrap-up of a career that, let's get serious, no one is ever going to coach 40 years and average 50 wins ever again.
I'm with you completely on that. Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, kind enough to join us. It got me thinking, you know, you've got four teams in the College World Series from the SEC, three from the West and Vanderbilt. You know, college basketball in the SEC, a really good season yet again. Alabama again in the national championship game in football. Who's had the most success out of the big three sports in the SEC this season overall, in your opinion?
That's an interesting question. Alabama.
I try to do that every once in a while to keep you on your toes, Mike.
Yeah, Alabama and Florida also went to the Women's College World Series, but the Alabama baseball team is horrible.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question. Tennessee's football team was pitiful, even though the baseball team and the basketball teams had good seasons. LSU.
Nobody expected LSU to finish sixth in the country. Nobody.
No, and you can make a case for LSU. I would argue Mississippi State making the College World Series, getting to a bowl game, making the NCAA tournament.
LSU gets to the Sweet 16 in basketball. Yeah. They get to a Super Regional in baseball. They finish sixth in the country in football. Kentucky, you know, in basketball, they had a pretty good football season.
You're right. I mean, if I'm an LSU fan, and the LSU softball team was quite good as well, so that's a pretty darn good athletic year for LSU. You look at the other school, you know. Georgia's basketball team was pitiful. Tennessee's football team was pitiful. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M's basketball team was pitiful. you know, so, Auburn getting to the Final Four and getting to the College World Series, both are shocking. Football team let them down.
But, yes, they did.
Yeah, there's been a lot of interesting athletic seasons in the SEC. I mean, again, it is, you know, SEC fans crow, and rightly so, about their football. But you and I have talked many times, the baseball and softball programs in the SEC, top to bottom, no league can touch the SEC in those two sports, top to bottom. The basketball was the sort of the albatross, but the last 3 years, the basketball has been ratcheted up big time in the SEC. Wow. Women's basketball has always been pretty good in the SEC, too. So, you know, every sport, those are the, I like to consider those the five major sports. I think the SEC shines brightest of all the leagues when you consider all five major sports, and it's frankly not close.
I'm with you, Michael Huguenin, The Athletic. The SEC media days are not that far away. The circus is about to roll into town again. Where is it this year, by the way?
Hoover. It's back in Hoover.
Back in Hoover. Okay. What's going to be the what's going to be the big storyline that you predict or you think is going to come out?
You know, the Auburn quarterbacks, is this the year Georgia finally beats Alabama? Is this the year Kirby finally beats his mentor? Mm-hmm. The LSU offensive change, what's it going to be like? Can Texas A&M make strides in year two under Fisher like they did in year one under Fisher? If so, they'll be competing for the SEC West title. And I think Tennessee will be a story, too. How much longer is this program going to be just flat-out mediocre? We're going on more than a decade now of Tennessee football being irrelevant nationally. I mean, they were relevant a little bit because of Lane Kiffin, not what they did on the field, but because of Lane Kiffin. They were relevant nationally, not because of what they did on the field with Butch Jones, but what they did trying to replace Butch Jones. Mm-hmm. But on the field, Tennessee football has been irrelevant, and I'm sure Pruitt's not exactly the best public speaker in terms of saying anything interesting. Mm-hmm. But I got to think that he's going to be asked in Hoover, you know, when are you guys actually going to turn the corner? But I think the main overriding storyline in the SEC going into the season is this Georgia's year finally, and the Auburn quarterback situation, because Malzahn's job security is tied directly to Bo Nix and Joey Gatewood.
Is that the coach that's on the hottest of the hot seats?
Oh, I think Malzahn is, no question. Yeah. You know, people want to say Derek Mason. It's Vanderbilt football. No one cares.
But the guy at Arkansas?
I think they're expecting 4 or 5, maybe even 6 wins this year. But I think he's got enough of a cushion considering he's coming in. He's changed the offensive and defensive schemes. The players on hand weren't that good to begin with. He's relying on transfer quarterbacks this year. His number one and number two guys are in some order. Ben Hicks from SMU, Nick Starkle from Texas A&M are going to be the top two quarterbacks. So I think Chad Morris is fine, but yeah, they don't want to go 2-10 again, but they're going to be better than that. But I think the only guy truly on the hot seat going in is Malzahn. They open with Oregon, which is a good team with a Heisman candidate quarterback and a gigantic and talented offensive line, and they also play LSU in September. That's going to be a tough first month for Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, interesting. It's not that far away, man. It's not that far away. I'd like to be Kevin Durant. I know it's sad that the guy gets hurt, but all he has to do is opt in, take a year off. How would you like to be able to take a year off and just work out, recover, recuperate? You're going to be 32 afterwards. And the worst you can do is get $31.5 million for doing nothing.
Yeah, I like Kevin Durant. I always have. I mean, he's a really high-level player, and by all accounts, pretty good dude. Feel bad for him. But, I think it's all tempered by the, you know, yes, he could potentially lose a season in his prime, but that's potentially. He also could come back in 7 or 8 months and play.
Yes.
So I would think, though, that you're right. I think there's going to be some teams that maybe won't bid as heavily as they would have if he had been 100% healthy, though. I also think, though, that given how good he is, that there's going to be free agent suitors anyway. So It certainly makes the game six of the NBA Finals a little bit more interesting. And there's game seven of the NHL Finals tonight. But if Durant were healthy, I think this Golden State would have won it already, I think. But because I think Durant is that good. And, you know, Klay Thompson missed a game and has not been 100%. But this is a really good final series, and I think everybody's finally realizing, hey, Kawhi Leonard's pretty good.
Yeah, I think Toronto wins the series. I don't know in six or in seven. I hope it's seven. I think Durant says, you know what? I'm going to go sign in on my last year, $31.5 million. I'm going to make one more run. I'm going to sit out. I'm going to rest. I'm going to recover, and I'm going to get ready. When the playoffs come, I'm ready to roll, and we're going to win that thing. That's what I think.
I can see that happening. And the thing is, I mean, I get the fact that some people don't like today's NBA where, well, not really any sport, whereas if you're a free agent, you can sort of cherry pick where you want to go to get a ring. Because I always thought it was about winning it all, so I got no problem with that. But if you like offensive basketball and you have not been enthralled the last couple of years with Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant on the same team, then I would argue you don't really like basketball. Because those three dudes can shoot the heck out of it. They pass the ball well. Yep. Thompson's a really good defender. Durant can play defense when he wants to. Curry tries. He's just not that physical. But and they are fun to watch offensively because that ball moves around. And it's, you know, they always seem to get really great shots. It's fun basketball to watch.
Michael Hugin and The Athletic. We'll start delving deeper into SEC football, but it's the dog days of summer. I greatly appreciate your time, my friend. Go have some fun.
All right, talk to you next week. Thanks.
All right, you got it. Michael Hugin and The Athletic. When we come back, we'll preview the U.S. Open, Pebble Beach. Alex Myers next. Welcome you back. It's always a fun week when we have yet another major golf championship, the U.S. Open, the 119th edition, scheduled for this Thursday through Sunday at Pebble Beach Golf Links in Pebble Beach, California. It'll be the seventh major and sixth U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, which last hosted the U.S. Opens in 2000, won by Tiger Woods, 2010 by Graham McDowell, respectively. So what's going to happen this year? Well, let's go to our golf expert from Golf Digest, the one and only Mr. Alex Myers. Alex, good afternoon, my friend. Are you excited about the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach?
Oh, I'm very excited, Jordy. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's quite a place, obviously. There's no place like it. I was just here for a couple days in 2010, getting the full week this time, and it's spectacular. Although just a little while ago, the fog, it's like they turned the machine on it, and all of a sudden the fog came in, and it's a little chillier, and so it's not the weather that we saw these last couple days.
The pros don't have to pay, but when the people, you, me, and the fence post want to go play at Pebble Beach, what does it cost for a round there? It's pretty deep pockets, right?
I think it's $550 plus $100 for a caddy plus tip. So you're looking all in at least $700.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So it's pricey. I've never played it, unfortunately. I've obviously now walked it a bunch. It's, you know, I think it's the kind of thing you obviously do once and it's worth it. It'd be tough to do it multiple times unless you have an unlimited budget. But, it's, you know, it's worth it, at least for that one time, obviously. Not only is it beautiful, but all the history and everything else, and, you know, a great course, of course, as well.
It would be perfect for my game because I get my money's worth. I'd be swinging all over the place. I can promise you that. Is this a bucket list course of golf? Is this one of the top 10 places that you got to go see if you're a golf guy?
I think so, without a doubt. I mean, obviously, you know, when you talk about golf, the bucket list places, the top places, you know, of course, Augusta. Going to the Masters is probably everyone's number one. Then again, you can't play Augusta, though. You have no chance of playing there. At least you can play here if you're willing to spend the money. But I think both to see a major and to play, if you combine those two things, then certainly this would have to be at the top of the list. You know, obviously there've been, you know, these new resorts, the Abandoned Dunes and the Cabot Cliffs. They've all tried to kind of replicate Pebble Beach and the Monterey Peninsula. You know, it's not just Pebble Beach here. There's other spectacular courses right in this area on 17-mile drive. And what's great is when you come and visit, like, my parents don't play golf. They come here. They drive through. They walk on the 18th hole. You're allowed to walk around and see everything. And even if you don't like golf, it's just spectacular scenery.
Yeah, yeah. Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Okay, U.S. Open. When I hear U.S. Open golf, I always think of thick, thick rough. They try and make it challenging. They want to get as close to par as you can. They want to make it tough on the golfers. Is that what they've done this year at Pebble?
Yes. Overall, yes. What I would say is maybe a little different is at Pebble, with the wind, with the small greens, they can't be quite as aggressive in setting up the course as they are in other places. And obviously that's gotten them in trouble throughout the years. And you've heard players complaining a lot recently. You heard players complaining last year at Shinnecock. Even the USGA admitted they crossed the line at Shinnecock last year during that third round, which the guys who teed off late just had such a disadvantage with the golf course drying out. So, you know, you would think, but we keep saying this, that with all the times that they've maybe crossed the line in terms of course setup and it's got unfair and not on the players' nerves, you would think that they would bend over backwards for that to not happen again. So every year we think, well, this is the year it's not going to happen. And then it still happens. So you never know. But I will, again, you know, with Pebble, at least it doesn't seem like there's been those controversies at Pebble where there have been at Shinnecock or Oakmont or Wingfoot or what have you. So, you know, I think even they recognize, well, there's only so much we have to do to this course. It's going to play tough. It's going to be windy. The greens are really small. But, yes, the rough in particular around the greens is it's pretty juicy.
Every course, every tournament seems to have a shot. And the shot that I always remember from Pebble Beach is Tom Watson out of the sand trap on whatever green that was that he holed it out to help him win the championship, right? That's what comes to mind to me. Is that what comes to mind to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You're right. Pebble's got a couple of the most iconic moments, the Watson chip in 82 on 17, and then on that same hole, Jack Nicklaus, sorry, 82, and same hole in 1972, Nicklaus hit a one iron off the flagstick to tap in range. So that was incredible. And then, you know, with Tiger in 2000, it was, he won by so much. The funniest thing is the signature, you know, moment on Sunday was him grinding over a 15-footer for par just because he didn't want to make a bogey that day. He had a 15-shot lead, and this guy was still grinding and fist-bumping and just really, you know, stepping on everyone's throat. So that's kind of the signature from 2000. 2010 was, you know, I mean, kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little. It was such an interesting event the last time the U.S. Open was here. Graham McDowell ended up winning, but it was a surprise because, you know, you had Tiger, Phil, Ernie Els all in the mix on Sunday, and yet none of them were able to really make that final push. Graham McDowell won. Gregory Havray, who has never been heard from since, was the runner-up. So it was interesting. And then, of course, Dustin Johnson had his first, you know, heartbreak in a major, and this was actually his worst if you really want to get into it, because he shot an 82 and just totally tanked.
I remember.
He was the two-time defending champ at Pebble Beach, the AT&T. He had the 54-hole lead. He looked invincible, and shot that 82. And honestly, you know, it's kind of, you know, should have been a
hung with him.
He's shown what was going to happen to him later on with some of these other heartbreaks. So, but certainly you can look back at this event, and a million different memories pop out because this place is really special.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest, the U.S. Open Pebble Beach starts Thursday. All right, with that in mind, gee whiz, the storylines for this one, all right? Has anybody ticked off Brooks Koepka yet? Rory McIlroy, my gosh, what a final round he had over the weekend. And, of course, there's always the Tiger story. What am I missing?
Yep. Oh, man. I mean, yeah, there's so many great stories. How about Jordan Spieth, kind of his resurgence in the last month?
Yeah.
We just mentioned Dustin Johnson. How about him coming back to the scene of that 82? You know, still a guy who everybody kind of scratches their head and says, how does he only have one major? Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot going on. Phil Mickelson, of course, still looking for that elusive first U.S. Open. He has 6 runner-ups, wow, which is obviously a record. And, you know, he turns 49 on Sunday during the final round. He's trying to complete that career Grand Slam. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. but certainly, you know, Brooks Koepka deserves to be the biggest story. Whether he is or not is a different question. But, you know, the guy's won 4 majors in the last 2 years. He's trying to win a 3rd straight U.S. Open, which has only happened once in history, Willie Anderson, and that was in, you know, before electricity back in 1903. So, you know, it's basically he'd be the first person to do it, let's be honest. So if he can do that, you know, then we have to start thinking, we got to start putting him, you know, as an all-time great. I mean, because it's one thing, he's won at, like, Bethpage, for instance, was a big, brawny course, and obviously his length was huge with that. This is right. A thinking man's course. This is not a big course. It's one of the shorter courses, actually, a tour. It's just over 7,000 yards, and there's a lot more strategy here. There's a lot more precision involved here. Not that Brooks doesn't have those things or has displayed those things, but this would be a different type of course that he's won on before. So I know people are interested to see if he could win on this type of course. That just shows you he could win anywhere.
Alex, we saw Tiger win at Augusta. Then he didn't play again prior to the PGA, and that didn't go well because of that.
Right.
What has Tiger done since the PGA leading up to this?
Yeah, well, he only played once, but that's a lot more than, like you said, after the Masters. He played the Memorial, which was expected, obviously, Jack mm-hmm. Nicklaus' tournament, and he played well. You know, he kind of eased into it. He got off to an okay start, kind of had a couple double bogeys along the way, but he had a tremendous final round, at least front nine, he was 7 under 12 holes in that front in that final round. He was hitting all the different shots, and what was crazy is that it almost looked like he wasn't even trying to win necessarily. He was just looking to work on things to get comfortable, practicing different shots and, you know, in different situations. He just was in complete control, which actually reminded me of kind of that last 7 holes at Augusta where he was in complete control finally. So I think he came away from that week very excited. He's looked really good this week. Very loose. Saw him joking around with Patrick Reed yesterday on the putting green. Patrick Reed uses all these tees. It's really amazing. He probably puts 100 tees in the ground, and he putts from each of those spots. So he takes up a huge portion of the practice green. And Tiger at one point came over and said, "Hey, you need a tee?" And took a tee out of his pocket. And Reed just reached into his pocket, and he had a handful of tees, and Tiger just started laughing. So he's really loose. Justin Thomas was putting on one side of the green. Tiger putted one through his line on purpose just to kind of tweak Justin. You know, he looks good. He looks relaxed. And I think he's confident. And, you know, obviously you come back to a place where you want to win a tournament by 15 shots, mm-hmm. and everybody's still talking about it nearly 2 decades later. You know, you have pretty good vibes.
All right, so let's handicap this thing, if you don't mind. I know it's a stab in the dark, but you know the course. You know players have had success. Some players are coming in hot. Some are not. We've had surprises in the past. We've had those that were expected to win it. So where is Alex Myers of Golf Digest leaning toward this week?
Well, my top guy, we've already talked about him, and I know I keep getting drawn into him, but Dustin Johnson, I know it's not going on a limb. He is the betting favorite, even over Brooks Koepka. I'm sure Koepka's not pleased about that. But Dustin Johnson, I think he's got some unfinished business here, obviously, from 2010. It's a place where, again, he's won the regular tour event here twice. So obviously he really likes it. And, you know, of all the majors, the U.S. Open seems to be the one he plays the best in because all the long hitters. He's probably the straightest, of those guys. You know, he kind of just plays that little cut. He doesn't, you know, overswing. And I saw him hit a drive on 18 yesterday that was just insane. People people's mouths dropped. I mean, it was 80 yards past where these other guys were hitting the ball. Wow. So, you know, when he has that power, that gear, when he needs it. And, yeah, I just, you know, you look at his record, as some people say, well, you know, he doesn't get the job done in the majors. And I say, well, he's finished runner-up in both majors this year. He's played great in the biggest events this year. And that ratio at some point, I think, just has to balance out at some point. 20 regular wins, only one major. I think he starts to add to that second total, and maybe this week.
What kind of tournament do you see for Tiger this week? Please tell me he makes the cut.
He's 100% making the cut. I mean, okay. he's locked in. Let's, you know, Matt Bates was weird. He was sick. He talked about that a little more yesterday. Yeah. I think he was really sick. I mean, everybody kind of scratched their head that week when he didn't show up on the Wednesday before, you know, a major. It just didn't make any sense to not show up at all. He's there right now. He's playing nine holes, which is what he did before the Masters. Yesterday he didn't play any holes, but he putted for a long time. He went to the range for a while. Today he was on the range, and then he played. He's going to have a good week. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think he's feeling really confident. He's coming here. The one thing I'm a little worried about is the putting, especially on these greens. He says they kind of give him a little bit of fits, and he was working with Matt Killen, who is a putting coach for Justin Thomas. He's worked with him before. It's not news or anything, but they were really working. I mean, he was very hands on, going over stuff with him yesterday on the putting green. So you know, you'd like to think that Tiger knows what he's doing on the greens. He's a pretty good putter. But I feel like his long game, everything's in good form. He's going to have a good week.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Are we anticipating good weather? Is that going to be an issue? I know the fog rolls in, you know, out of the clear blue. But what kind of weather conditions are we expecting?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, when we got here on Monday, I mean, this was a little much, but it was about 80 degrees. It's sunny, and at Pebble, That's kind of unusual, but I mean, I got to say, it was legendary. I mean, it was amazing walking around. And yesterday it was a little cooler, but still sunny and everything else. And again, this morning it felt great. And all of a sudden this fog came in, and the weather dropped about 10 degrees, and the breeze is picking up. And I think it's going to be like this the next few days. Now, luckily there's no rain or anything in the forecast, and then not like a ton of wind, nothing crazy, but you know, you're on the water. There's going to be wind. The fog is definitely something that is a little bit of a nuisance. I mean, it gives you just something extra to think about, either when you're lining up shots or whatever. The ball's not going to fly as far as you would expect in, you know, we're hitting the summer right now. Expect the ball to be flying. Not here. You know, you got to factor that in as well. So just a few things for the guys to factor in, just to maybe throw them a little off, but overall, you know, you can't ask for much better. I mean, it's going to be in the 60s, a little breeze and no rain. That's the most important thing. No rain, no thunderstorms. Yeah. At least, we should have hopefully no delays or anything.
Alex, when we talk about Augusta, the crowd is called patrons. They still sell pimento cheese sandwiches for a really, really good price. The patrons can't run. They must walk. What's something iconic about Pebble Beach that we need to know? Is there anything?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's the views. It's those holes that stretch 6 through 10. You know, it's tough to find a more spectacular place in the world, really. And I got to say, if you come in the main gate, or if you're where we are at the media center, it's a long walk out there. I guess that's one thing to tell people. I mean, when you walk Pebble, when you walk out to the 10th hole, when you get to that 10th green, you've probably walked 3 miles at least from the first hole. It goes straight out, way out. And then you come back and you work your way back. So it's definitely one of those courses where, you know, if you want to see some of these spectacular holes, you got to walk, but it's totally worth it. But yeah, as for the prices, I saw the concession stand yesterday. It's not cheap. It's not Augusta. Let's just put it that way. It's $11 for a burger. It's $12 for a chicken sandwich. It's pricey.
That's amazing, Alex. I can't thank you enough, Dustin Johnson. We'll see what happens. Enjoy the good life, my friend. Enjoy.
Thanks, Jordy. I will. I'm really excited. It's a special place, and hopefully we get a great tournament. Thanks for having me on, man.
You're the best. Alex Myers, Golf Digest, with the U.S. Open starting on Thursday. We'll be back to wrap things up here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Welcome back. Let's get right to it. We do it every day at this time. It's our daily history lesson on this day, June the 12th. We go back 10 years to the year 2009. He was the really a true two-sport player. Ended up playing in the NFL. He was an extraordinary return specialist. But on this day, Trindon Holliday, remember him? Trindon Holliday ran a 10-flat to win the 100-meter title at the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Trindon Holliday, I can still see him returning kicks for LSU. He made a living out of it with the Denver Broncos and some other teams in the NFL. At one time, the fastest man alive. Trindon Holliday won the NCAA 100 meters on this day, June the 12th, the year 2009. What a special talent he was. My goodness gracious. All right, if today is your birthday, June the 12th, happy birthday from all of us here at 103.7 The Game and Delta Media. Hope you have a special, special day. The late President George H.W. Bush was born on this day back in 1924. Wrestler extraordinaire Mark Henry is 48 years old today. What about that? Kendra Wilkinson, reality star, 34 years old today. Let's see who else. Anybody of significance? Not really. Slow day. Slow day for birthdays, except for you, because it's your day, and that makes it even more special than ever before. So happy birthday to all of you. If it's your anniversary, man, I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Congratulations. Special thanks to our guest today. We get a lot of love to track and field, and deservedly so. Javon Harrison, if you missed it, won both the long jump and the high jump. No one in the 98-year history of NCAA track and field has ever done that. And he's just a sophomore at LSU. You can go to 1037thegame.com and go on demand and find that interview. We also thank Cody Worsham. It's been a great LSU sports year. Overall, put everything collectively together, it's been terrific. Michael Huguenin, the one and only from The Athletic, and Alex Myers previewing the U.S. Open. We can't thank them enough. Tomorrow, we'll preview Game 6 of the NBA Finals and anything else that's happening in the pursuit of Anthony Davis and much, much more. CD, job well done as always. Thank you for all your hard work. Thanks to all of you for listening in and to our partners that make it possible. We couldn't do it without you. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We have only one Wednesday, June the 12th. So have a great afternoon. Great evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Same great station, 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.